Go for it.
We're live. Hello, everybody. This is the great Jason Lavelle, and I'm coming to you live from the Holland, Michigan studios. I'm losing my microphone. Coming to you live from the Holland, Michigan studios in my basement, the closet, where I'm locked away from everyone else. And this is another episode of Spilling Ink, your favorite author talk show. I'm sorry, Joe. I'm sorry, Josh, and the other Josh. And Christy, this is everyone's favorite. They love us. All right, I'm kidding. I don't know if you guys love us or not, but I've got the lovely Miss Katie Salitis. She doesn't want to join in on this conversation. And then the guest of the century. It is the great and powerful Mr. Thomas Anthony Lay. Thomas. Oh, yes.
We need like an applause sound effect to go with that.
Let's make our own.
Thomas, tell us a little bit about yourself. Tell us what you do.
So, my name is Thomas Anthony Lay, and I am a dark fantasy author, the god of the Nisus universe, if you will, but a mere mortal in our own, sadly. So the debut novel in the Nisus universe has just come out, and it's already broken records within my publishing house, which is Retescue. It's had more digital pre-orders than any other book within Rhetoric Askew. So really pleased with that. It's been getting some incredible reviews. And it's called The Age of Reckoning, Volume 1. So it was the first part of a trilogy set in the world of Nisus.
Age of Reckoning. Ooh, I like the sound of this. What's the website for Red Askew?
I believe it is just rhetoricaskew.com. Okay. They're going to kill me if that's wrong.
Well, I'm going to go find it, and if it's wrong, we're calling you out.
I mean, if you Google it, they are the first results. So
Jason's on fire tonight. We've already got a comment from Joe.
Uh-oh, what a joke.
You shouldn't have talked crap about other people's shows. You're in trouble.
No, damn it. Oh, sorry, Joe. Yeah. Oh, so tell us a little bit about The Age of Reckoning.
So The Age of Reckoning is set in a time where the whole of Nisus is at war. So there's five unique races in Nisus. There are humans, obviously, the race of man. There are the Forsaken, which are basically undead, but not like zombies. They're like a unique spin on undead. There are Wolven, which are like giant wolf people. They're awesome. And there are Marusai, which are amphibious beings, and then Korkrenis, which are like giant earth demons. So everyone's at war because there are six crystal shards of immense power that when brought together form a crystal that the bearer of which can shape the world how they want. So everyone's fighting for these shards because they want the power. They want to decide how the world looks. And then one king of man, King Aerith III, at the start of the Age of Reckoning, decides enough is enough. And his son kind of inspires him a little to bring peace to the world, as his great 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 times 100 grandfather did many solar cycles ago. So he thinks, I can do this. So he sets out on a journey to bring peace. Obviously, that may be a little naive of him, thinking it's simple. So he encounters many obstacles in the way, like cats.
Well, it sounds awesome. I can't see you guys, but it sounds awesome. No, so you said they're humans, but did you say there were other creatures as well?
Yes.
So the wolf creatures, are they like shifters, or are they actually like half man, half wolf all the time?
So they're no part man. They basically evolve from forest dwelling forest dwelling hounds. Sorry. So they've evolved and they have an intelligence.
No, we can't print this.
Equal. No. They have an intelligence equal to humans, basically. But they have a very different style of society, being very heavily based on their primal animalistic wolf.
So very
instincts.
Much pack hierarchy, alpha yes. wolf type leader.
Yes.
Okay. So now, do they walk on hind legs or do they walk on all fours still?
They walk on hind legs, but if they need to run, they drop down and they're off.
So are these, they're kind of like a reverse werewolf kind of things, maybe?
Yeah, I get, like, they're like what a werewolf is when it's a full moon, but permanently.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah, kind of like that. But they're pretty damn big as well. There.
And how do they speak?
So within their own society, they speak using body language and grunts and howls and things like that look normal. But the leader, who's called the Ulf, which means wolf in Norwegian, he or she, whichever's the most powerful at the time, can speak a few words of the common tongue because they use it for diplomacy. When I say diplomacy, the wolven are very, very like into themselves and they shun outsiders. So their diplomacy normally ends with "get out or I'll eat you."
That sounds about right. See?
It's there. Just for you, Joe. Just for you.
Not five minutes in and we've already got a request for you to say Twitter.
It precedes me. I'm gonna have to bring it up like an audiobook of just Twitter. But you know.
I like it.
At least it's something funny, right?
I don't know if it would be copyrighted or anything. So I'll have to get in contact with Twitter and be like, look, can I just be your spokesperson? Because
There you go. Perfect marketing opportunity.
Well, and I'm looking at your book on Amazon right now. It looks awesome.
Thanks very much.
Yeah,
so Matt, you said you're a record breaker for Rediscue already. So tell us what your book has done so far.
So far it has surpassed the highest number of digital pre-orders within Rediscue. That's awesome. The title.
That's pretty awesome.
Yeah, when they told me, I was just like, what? It's amazing. But I'm hoping to break that record with book two.
You're with an indie publisher. So we've got a small publisher here. And we talk a lot to various types of authors, whether it's indie or traditional. And we'd like to kind of outline the different processes of how publishing works. So indie, obviously, Jason, indie obviously is do it yourself. What's it like working with the smaller press? Do you have a lot more say in what happens to your book, the cover, things like that?
Yeah, I personally love it. It's totally different to how I expected. There's much more of a personal aspect with it. They're much closer to you. You feel more like part of a family than sort of just another author for another publisher. So when they first brought me on board, they showed genuine excitement for my story. And they seem to care about it as a story rather than just...
I didn't do that. That was the cat.
Rather than just a like another selling platform for them, which I feel like a lot of big publishers, like the Big Five, for instance, will be like, oh, okay, this is another one of our things to sell. They seem genuinely passionate about the story. I'm working at the minute with Dusty on editing it again, ready for the print, just to make sure it's absolutely the best it can possibly be, which is amazing. And they just sort of bring new ideas to the table as well. And as you're saying with the set, I definitely feel like I've got much more say in what happens rather than it being carted off to editors and they're like, this is how it's going to be now. So none of the story has changed from my submission draft. None of the story at all. It's all kept exactly how I've visioned it and how I've wrote it. Some suggestions have been made for like character mannerisms and things like that. But the story from start to finish is exactly how I wrote it. So they're not like, cut this chapter and keep this character alive. And
That's good to know, because a lot of times, you know, with indies, you have 100% control. You hire the freelance editor to do it and they edit the book. They don't tell you how to change it. But when it comes to a publishing house, if they have a different view on what it should be, or if they have a different style, they may try and alter your book to fit their company style. Jason, you dealt with Evolved. Were they like that?
They had more control than some indie publishers. I still like when they were doing edits. You know, the editor was going through everything and doing track changes edits. And then they would send it back to me and say, you know, these are the edits we think you need to make. And I could go through and accept them or not accept them as I saw fit. And all of them, well, all but a couple of them were were good and acceptable changes. It's mostly, you know, mistakes, typos or mistakes in wordings or using this type of verb when it should have been that type of verb. But I've heard from some people, actually a lady I'm going to be talking to shortly, Stacy Feilich, and she's with a traditional publishing house, but they're smaller. They're not a small press per se, but they are a smaller publishing house. And she was telling me that once she sent them the manuscript, there was so much back and forth and so many changes that they wanted that even though she was involved with the process, at the end of the line, she felt like the book wasn't even the book that she had written anymore. And I was like, you know, were you happy with it? Were you sad with it? She was like, you know, I ended up loving it, but she's like, you know, I felt like part of me had kind of been stripped out of it. Maybe a little bit of her voice had been taken out of that. So, and that would be really frustrating. And I just signed up with a Three Furies Press from our friends who are on the show often, Isa and Julia and Rebecca.
Julia's in the audience today.
Hi, Julia. I'm very, very happy to be working with you guys. And already the difference between working with them versus Evolved, the small press I was working with last year, it's incredible. The atmosphere is so relaxed and comfortable, and we're actually able to have conversations. Whereas Evolved, while they try to be accommodating, they're not as approachable. It's, you know, you're going through this person and then hoping that person will get back to you. Whereas with Three Furies, it's like, I know these ladies and I can talk to them and they know what I'm going through as an author because they're all authors as well. And I think that's an awesome thing to have is people that understand you and understand what it's like to be an author trying to get your book out there and reach people, because authors can be fragile little creatures sometimes, and we can
sometimes.
Be easy. Sometimes we can and sometimes we really need people to hold our hands and get us through some of the dark shit that we're going through with trying to share our passion with the world, because it's a scary process. But so bottom line is, yes, Three Furies has been awesome, and I'm a big fan of small press publishers because just what Thomas was saying, that you have so much more control and you can communicate with them. And if you get the right publisher for you, I think you're going to have a great time with it. And who knows if we're going to make tons of money? We'll all cross our fingers for that. But as long as we're enjoying the process, right? You know, as long as you're not pulling your hair out, because you've got such nice hair. Did you recently get a haircut, Thomas? It just looks so sharp.
Wow. Thanks. it's too short for my liking, but, thanks for the sharpness. I'll take that.
What the hell? What is happening here?
Wow. Oh, you just dig them up so much, and here they go.
You know, I heard, you know what I heard about Three Furies? I heard that they're just bad guys. They're all so bad.
Rebecca, if you want me to just kick him out of the chat, just say so.
I'll go to sleep, man. I'm so tired.
No, but that's important. I think we should talk about that, about finding the right press for you, because it's not always just indie or just traditional. There are a lot of different options in between, and finding whether it's, you know, the small press or the I'm still rocking in my corner in the fetal position from his hurtful words. Wow, Jason.
You know, Joe, you gotta know that.
That's not cool.
Katie sends me a script before every show. It's all scripted out. It was her writing. So, Katie, you were saying something intelligent, and I totally.
As usual. I think we need to like turn this into like a morning radio show kind of thing. Just Jason's derailing hour.
I'm telling you, we've got to do our pop culture show. And
yes.
I joked about it at first, but then my wife heard it and she was like, you totally got to call it Pop Tarts. It would be hilarious.
Yes.
I would so do that.
Oh, goodness. Oh, Julia wants to hold my hand. You are so sweet. Oh, the Three Furies. I forgive Rebecca. Isa and Julie, you guys are awesome. Rebecca. Although Rebecca writes a mean erotica. Let me tell you that. I did an ARC of her book. What is it? Keep Her Safe, I think was what it was called. And It was good stuff, man. It was really, really good stuff. And I think I told her that. no, damn it. I'm going to shut off my computer so she can't get me. But no, it was so good because sometimes erotica is just totally crap. It's either all like penthouse letter sex and it's just kind of gross.
Tell us how you really feel. Don't hold back.
Well, you know, or it's all lovey-dovey crap. And I was like, no, I need a nice balance of both. I need some good realism. And it really nailed it. So I was pleased because I haven't read any of Rebecca's books before. So it was an interesting introduction. And it's weird. You know what's weird, Katie? Is when you write erotica or someone you know writes erotica and they ask you to read it. Mm-hmm. And then you've got to talk to them as if they're a normal person when you've just read their sex stuff. I'm like, this is weird.
Is this based on personal experience or?
Yeah, Jason, you've sent me yours before.
Yes, that's true. That's true. I did some, you know what? I'm going to keep going with those. I'm going to keep writing them in secret and then I'll publish them under that pen name. Oh, I don't know. Yeah, it's weird. You know what the most awkward thing ever was back at that time when I wrote the first one, my mom was still doing a lot of editing for me because she was an English teacher for 30 years. And it's like, well, fuck, great editor, right? Well, it was not a good idea to send her erotica. It was not.
Yeah, Jason.
Things haven't been the same since 2014, okay?
You know what my pen name is, right?
I do.
And you know what I write under the pen name, right?
I do.
My dad reads everything I write.
That's so weird. I mean, not to be gross, but I mean, let's be real here. He's over there next door in his house next door in his darkened bedroom with just his little book light on reading your erotica while you're next door.
Yeah. So Thomas, how's it going?
That's called support, that is. That's family support. He's reading it again. Oh,
and no, and he's so proud too. It's even worse because he's like, he's telling all of his friends, have you read my daughter's work? And I'm like, oh dear God, stop.
That's amazing. Just own it. Just like, yeah.
Oh, shit. What were you talking about, Katie? You were talking about, what were you talking about?
Indie presses.
Indie presses.
The different ways that you can publish. So Thomas, tell us about how you feel about your publisher now.
I love them. I'll be honest. I had no idea when I sort of got into this business that indie publishers were a thing. I genuinely didn't know. I had my spreadsheet of agents that I had to query. I had the agency and then the agent name and the date I sent the query off and when I had to chase it up and then whether it was a rejection, yes, whether it was not a rejection, never. And I had like, I was color coding them. So it was like red, as I was going down the list. And I sort of happened across PitMad on Twitter. And I was like, yeah, I'll give this a go. Well, why not? And then obviously Rescue liked my tweet. And then I looked at them and I was like, that's interesting. I didn't know that this kind of publisher existed. So I did a little bit of research. And then I was like, hell, I'm going to send them my manuscript. This is awesome. So I sent it to them and they loved it. So I was like, I'm so glad I found out.
That's awesome, man.
That's pretty cool. And not everybody knows about PitMad. Can you explain that to the audience who don't know?
Yeah, so PitMad is a pitch wars on Twitter. There we go, Joe, just for you. It's where you can basically write.
Wait, where is it? Where is it hosted again?
It's on Twitter. Twitter. Oh. I should do an audiobook erotica just for you, Jason. I think. Yeah, there you go. Just of me saying Twitter over and over again in very sultry voices.
I'd listen.
Yeah.
There could be some money in this. I'll give it a go. I've got a good mic. I'll try it.
Twitter.
Damn. Dude, Katie, are you pregnant?
What I think we're talking about right now for just completely off the rails giggling.
Wow. Well, you know what the funny thing is that before we went on air, Thomas, you were telling us that over Jane, you're hired for Jane. She's in 100 100%. No, but
I'll take it.
That's our wayward co-host. So she was supposed to be here. She's here in spirit.
But you told us that your accent is actually not good where you're from. You said you sound like a farmer.
Yeah, absolutely. I try my hardest to not speak like the people from where I'm from. Just going to offend every single person in the Southwest now. But because so I imagine it's sort of like the equivalent of what the Texan accent might sound like to people not from Texas. I can't make the direct comparison because I don't know how you guys feel about that, but definitely other people from other places in the UK can't take us seriously in Somerset, like especially if we're in a high up job, like a hotel concierge or something like that. And it's just like, you're just a farmer. You're not a concierge. So I'll break into what people down here actually sound like. And I'm trying to tame my accent away. But so if you're speaking to them, a lot of my family sound like this. So they'll go, "You're right, how's it going? What have you been up to recently? Been mowing the lawns?" It's just like...
Sexiest farmers on earth. Holy shit.
It's not an accent that I like to put across. But
I get that. I grew up in Texas, so I actually lost my accent immediately upon moving to Vegas because I was picked on for it for that exact reason.
So you try and tame it out, and it's just, yeah. So
but the minute you step back into your home turf, it comes right back. You can't even stop it, which is hard.
Yeah, and I live it, and it depends who I'm talking to. And my other half she laughs at me sometimes because if I'm talking to like you guys, to anyone else, it's my posh voice. And I often got called a posh farmer because I do try and keep as well spoken as I can to get rid of the accent. But
I need to find a way to use that term somewhere. Posh farmer.
Posh farmer. As soon as I talk to like one of my uncles, it just goes. And she just laughs at me because
Well, Katie has totally derailed you once again. But you were telling us about Pitt, Matt, I think.
Oh, yeah.
You?
Yeah, Pitch Wars, that's it. Sorry, Twitter peeps. But Pitch Wars on Twitter is where you basically get three tweets throughout the day, and you write a pitch for your story within one tweet. And it's advised that you space your three tweets out through the day. And if an agent or a publisher likes your tweet, it means that they want you to submit to them. It means they're interested and they want you to submit. So you give it your best shot. You plan out your three tweets and what you're going to say. And I tried. I only needed two. Well, I only did one. They liked the first one. I'm really excited. But I tweeted twice, so I had two different hooks. I had one that was more of like an enticing hook, like, Can the king succeed on his journey? And then I had a more factual of, nice, this is a dark fantasy. Like, so I had two different types of hook to experiment with. And it was the less factual one. I mean, it's still factual, but I mean, it's the more enticing one that that got the like. And the other one, it didn't get a like. So,
do you have a copy of those tweets on hand?
I don't. I would have to scroll back through my Twitter.
Damn it, I was going to have you do months. Your best radio announcer voice. To the tweets for us.
I can do my book pitch in my
do it.
Nice, this is a shit, what was it? Nice, this is a lore rich, character driven dark fantasy, sure to grip you from page one.
I like it. Well, and
as Jane would say, you're hired.
Yes. Well, and speaking of Jane actually asked a question, and Jane, we're gonna get your question now. Why won't that let me? There we go. Jane Taylor asks if there are any mistakes you made early on that you want to share with other authors, like things on the not to do list, kind of like the naughty list only for authors.
Ooh, authors behaving badly.
Yeah, we all do that, don't we, right? The not to do list. That's a really tough question, because does it pertain to writing or to publishing? Like to the road to publishing?
This is a question for you to answer however you see fit, as long as you use that that Southwest accent.
Oh no. I need one of my uncles to come in so I can like so mistakes I made early on was probably not doing enough market research into how to be published. And then when it came to figuring out, it was very daunting. And I was like, ooh, is this something that I can do? And but I pushed through and I went, yes, of course it is. And then I did it. But it was, I could have eliminated that sort of anxiety and how daunting it was by researching the ways about it. And maybe I'd have found out about indie publishers sooner. And been a little bit more relaxed to publishing. As to writing, I don't know. I feel like I've researched things quite well, and I learned from other people's mistakes. So I did pay for a professional editor before I started submitting it. I know a lot of people wouldn't do that, but I think that's probably quite a vital step. It's definitely at least have someone else look over it, because as the writer, you know what you're supposed to be seeing, you know what you're supposed to be reading, whereas someone else can't, they're not in your head, so they don't know. So that they've just got your words on the page. They don't know what's in your head. So you need to make sure that's coming across exactly how you intend it to come across. So I'd say that's a mistake that I haven't made, to not sound like, not to blow my own trumpet, but I think that it's quite a common mistake.
Did you use beta readers at all?
Yes, I've got a very solid team of beta readers who are my favorites. They're like amazing. My boss is one of them, and he is also my biggest fan. Everything I do, he's like, oh, can I? So the other day, I've been reworking the timings and the distances on my map. So I printed out an A3 sheet of my map with a grid pattern, and I was scribbling all over it to work out the timings. And probably shouldn't admit this, but I was doing this at work. Keep that between us. And
no one will ever hear that. Don't worry about it.
And he sort of looked over and he was like, oh, can I have that map when you're done? And I was like, what? I'm literally just scribbling stuff on it. And he was like, yeah, but I want to add it to my collection of like concept arts and stuff. And I was like, but it's just for like, do you honestly want, and he's like, yeah. So I finished with my scribbles of like, this is 400 kilometers and it would take 3 days on the back of a kiteling to get there. And you know, it's just like, there you go.
You know, that
awesome, your first fanboy.
Yeah.
Amazing.
Yeah. Well, and you know what? That's smart, because when you hit it big, that shit's going to be worth a ton of freaking money.
Yeah. I think that's why he's doing it. So he's
Jane's definitely admitted to it too.
Definitely, Jane. It's definitely slow days. There are some days.
Starting Monday, you and I. Starting Monday, I'll be done. I promise.
Yeah. Are you writing right now, or are you editing, Katie?
I'm doing spot revisions. I sent my beta readers out the final, and I got back some notes. So there's different spots that I've got to fix that I didn't really go through with a fine tooth comb. So now I'm trying to desperately race to the finish, staying up till 2 or 3 in the morning to go over chapters so that I can put this one to bed so I can start on the next project.
Now, is this the one that you're working on right now, or?
That's the one I'm going to be starting. This one that I'm doing right now is book 4 in the asset series.
Oh, okay. Okay. Exciting. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. All right.
Had to go yell at kids.
Oh man, look at
that. Need to come climb on top of me, so I have to hold them back at bay. Remember, I'm still in the living room here.
Look at all these comments. Holy cow. Why are most of them so negative toward me? That's no good.
Why is she mad at you?
Is that opener? Definitely the opener.
So who do you think were your, this isn't a question that us authors get asked a lot, but it's still a fun author question. Who are your biggest influences as an author, do you think?
It's always just every time someone asks me, I like forget the name of every other author in existence. And I'm like, who did the book about the rings and the something jewelry? And then
that happens.
Like, Obviously, I have to say J.R.R. Tolkien. I know he's such a common, but he's as complex as his work is, and I know it's not the most popular fantasy book with a lot of authors love it. You can't deny that he's kind of the grandfather of fantasy, isn't he? He brought it into the mainstream, definitely. So he's obviously a massive influence. Douglas Adams is probably my favorite author, because Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy must be the only book I've read more than once. I'm not a serial rereader because I read so slowly. I hate my reading pace. It's horrific. So I don't have time to reread because my to-be read list is like a million books long, and I can't afford to reread books, otherwise I'll never get to the ones that I need to get to.
I gotta stop you there because I'm one of those slow readers too, so you know, slow readers unite.
Yes.
When you read though, I'm guessing that you're probably reading not slowly because you're slow pacing yourself, but you're actually taking in all of the details.
Yes.
So when you finish a book, you can probably recall a lot of those details. Yeah. Just off the top of your head. Whereas I've got a friend who can read a book in 2 hours, and while she knows the basics of the story, she can't recall any of those specific details. So she's more like skim reading.
Yeah,
where you're really taking it in, you know, yeah, it might take you a while to get through the book, but you're going to memorize almost everything you've read.
Yeah. I often reread paragraphs like as I'm reading through. So I'll read a paragraph and then I'll be like, oh, that was cool. Hang on. And then I'll read it again. And I'll be like, yeah, I get that. So recently I've been reading, I've started the Witcher series of books. And I'm reading the first one at the minute, The Last Wish. And I'm about halfway through, but because my boss is really into The Witcher as well, I go back to him, I tell him everything that's happened so far in the book. And I'm like, oh, and I've met Princess Pavetta and she did this and she did this and this happened. Exactly like you said, I can recall everything. But going back to the influences, Douglas Adams with the Hitchhiker. I'm sorry, I'm looking this way because my bookshelf is there. So I'm looking for, but I'm just like, who else? The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. I've read about 3 or 4 times that book because it just has me in stitches. And I know it's sci-fi rather than fantasy, but like his writing style and the things he comes up with is genius. In the second one, where they go to the restaurant at the end of the universe, he like invents his own tents because you can meet your future self there as your past self in the present, and you need to be able to speak in the correct tense to make sure everything works out. So he invents, like, there's just a paragraph on this tense that he's invented, and it obviously it's complete nonsense, but it's hilarious. It's just really good.
It's pure creativity is what it is. And that's an amazing thing. And I'm a slow reader too, because I've got to have all the details unless it's something that I don't want to read. And then I'm just like, okay, I can skim this page, glance at names and then be done with it. But yeah, if you can't get the details, I don't know. But then there's like Jane here said she read The Stand in one day. And that's like a year long project for me.
Yeah,
you know, she writes super fast too. I'm scared working with her. You think I write fast? She, oh my god, she's gonna be mad at me. She's gonna be like thinking I'm a snail or something.
Yeah.
I beta read for her, and I probably beta read at least 3 books from her in the time it takes me to write one book.
Wow.
Well, I can write fairly quickly if I've got a partner and you're like going back and forth and you're charged up and you've got the ideas going. But if you just like leave me on my own, it's like I'll mosey along this story for a year and get there eventually. I'm like a hobbit, you know. I take the long way instead of taking the eagles straight to the volcano. No, I'm just gonna chill. I'm gonna take the long way. Yeah, anyhow, that's a big problem I have with that story. And I love Tolkien. I really do, but. Why the hell didn't they just take the eagles the whole way?
I don't want to be nerdy, but it has been explained, but I honestly wouldn't be able to recount the explanation to you.
Come on.
But it was something to do with them being from, I'm going to get pounced on now by super nerds who actually know like the full, but it's from them being a superior race, similar to like what Gandalf is. And they're not allowed to directly interfere with,
okay,
because Gandalf himself is so powerful that he could like fart the army of like the orcs down if he wanted to, but he's I don't know, legally not allowed to, I don't know what it is, but
He's supposed to observe and not interfere unless he, guides people.
Yeah,
the right thing. Yeah,
I think we need to have some real Lord of the Rings nerds on here to have a discussion about this and get deep into it, because
we could do that. We could do that.
Yeah,
we have to like guide, I think, but not.
Okay. All right. Well, I don't know. Gandalf gets all up in there a few times. I mean, he's meddling.
Yeah, but this is what I don't. So Gandalf and Sauron are the same, as far as I know. They're from the same race of people.
They are. They're different levels, though. And that's why Gandalf becomes Gandalf the White after he essentially sacrifices himself to allow the group to continue.
But then Sauron interferes directly. Who's stopping him? Where's the law?
Well,
I've been called out.
Somebody is wrong.
Hey, we actually have a real question, guys.
Uh-oh.
Like a for real, real question. Look at that. How long does it take you to write a novel from start to finish, beta readers, edits, and so on? That's like the whole shebang right there.
For me, it's about a year to write the book, and then working with the editor back and forth, probably 3 or 4 months. So almost a year and a half.
That seems reasonable. My first book was 10 years. But that was a very different process because I was 16 when I started. So I was finding my feet as well. So it ended up being scrapped and rewritten. Yeah. It was just scrapped and rewritten like 20 times.
Is that this book that you have out now?
Yeah. Yeah. The original draft, I wish I still had it, but I deleted it in a cringe session when I read back over it. But it was completely different. Like it wasn't even in the same world. It was, and I basically got to a point where I thought, right, I'm going to take this properly seriously. And I took the few elements I really liked from my original draft, and then I made it into something new. And then I crafted the World of Noesis around those few elements. And it really was just 5 or 6 elements that I really liked, and then most of the names. But the original one was just weird.
To put it into perspective, though, when you're writing epic fantasy or high fantasy, the world building itself is like an entirely separate entity. So you're building the world and then writing the story within the world. So it's going to naturally take you a lot longer because you're not only writing characters, but you're writing the world. You're writing everything in the world, how it interacts with each other, you know, food, plants, animals, everything that lives within that world, magic systems, science, technology, all of that stuff you have to come up with and you have to make sense of before you can actually have your characters interact properly within the world. So that does a lot of time.
Yeah. And when that's done, obviously the second book is much quicker because you've already done the world building for the first book. So my second book, I actually wrote the first draft in a month because I did the NaNoWriMo challenge. Mm-hmm. So I wrote 50,000 words for it. And I write my first drafts as like word vomit. I know you do the same, Katie, don't you? When you just spew it out, you don't care about spelling, grammar, you don't care about plot. Well, you obviously got the plot, but you don't care about like the interactions with the characters. You just write the basic plot in as much detail as you can get down, and then you sweep it through with the edits. So the second book is done, the first draft of it, and I'm working through that edit stage at the minute. So I'm on chapter 10 of 19, I think, and I'm doubling the length of each chapter as I'm going, because it's obviously you flesh it out, you make the characters real, you make the dialogues and the interactions real, you start describing things in more detail rather than just going, and they went to a spire that was kind of tall. And then my first drafts are hilarious because I literally write what I'm thinking. So I'm just like, one of the funniest ones, which I nearly forgot to take out, actually, one of my beaters found it, highlighted it and sent it to me. And one of my favorite characters, Lavanna. And I just put Lavanna Glowers or some shit just to show her discontent. But then after my edit, then I get my beaters on it and I'm like, just read it. They often sort of read it as I go. I say like, well, I'm up to chapter 9, so you can only read up to there. If you read any further, I'm going to ignore your comments because I'm not done the edit yet. But yeah, so they kind of read as I go, and then I address all their concerns and issues. And then I do another edit, and then I submit, and then go through with an editor, like professional editor, and then do those edits. So.
Ah, sorry. That's the cat again. Sorry. she likes these comments. No, you know, what's interesting, guys, is my writing process is kind of the opposite as from you guys. No, we can't do all the comments at once, Leah. So when I write the first draft, I'm putting it all down. I'm putting it all on there because I am really terrible at revisions. So once I get everything down there, I go through it, and on my revision pass, I'm basically just fixing crappy sentences and fixing paragraphs that aren't where they should be, or maybe 10 pages where it's just one big long block paragraph. That's a freaking nightmare to deal with when you get stuck in that loop. But yeah, you know, so I try to write as much as I can the first time around when I really feel that inspired spark going on. And then after I go through and do my revision pass, I send it off to a couple of really trusted friends, and, you know, one of them will send it back and suggest a few things. And then it goes off to the real editor. And a lot of times she will tell me, hey, you know, we're missing this or this in this scene. And, you know, the cool thing about the editor I use a lot, Jessica West, is that she's not only editing the manuscript, but she's really looking at some of the higher concept stuff as well, where, you know, you have this theme going on, or I see what you're trying to do here, but we're not quite getting it. We need a little bit more of this here for it to really come through for the readers. And I think that's extremely important for especially us indie authors that might not have a huge team of editors behind us, to have an editor that knows you very well and knows your work, knows your style, loves what you do. That way they can really tell you, okay, I know what we're trying to do here. Let's make it happen. And here are some of the changes that I can suggest to do that. Because otherwise, if you're just looking at grammar and punctuation and spelling, you might be missing a huge plot hole that your readers are going to be like, what the hell's happening here? And like, well, the universe doesn't make sense. That's just the way it is. And then you're in Doctor Who land, but which is great, by the way. I do love Doctor Who.
What season are you up to now?
You know, I am on the first season of Capaldi. It's Capaldi, right? That's his name.
Yeah.
Yep. I'm still on the first season of Capaldi. I tried to start the new season with the lady doctor, and
no.
And I watched a couple episodes and I was like, no, this feels wrong. I've got to go back. I like guilted myself into going back. So even though she seems awesome and I want to watch more of her, but
she's interesting. But I don't know if you saw the article that I wrote for First Comics News.
I didn't read that one because I was worried there were spoilers in it.
There wasn't really spoilers, but I wanted to draw attention to the fact that what they did wrong with that season had nothing to do with whether or not it was Jodie as the doctor. It had to do with the fact that they wiped the slate completely clean and didn't give us any of our familiar elements. And so it felt like watching not the actual show, but like, you know, a spinoff. And it wasn't until we got to the season finale where they actually brought the Daleks back in that I was like, oh, this is something familiar. This is Doctor Who. Okay. And then it started to feel okay. But it had nothing to do with whether or not it was Jodie as the doctor. I don't care if it's a man or a woman in the role. You got to make it feel like Doctor Who, too. You've got to have those familiar elements. And they not only changed the TARDIS, changed the doctor, changed the companions, changed all the scenery. It was like a brand new show.
Okay. Interesting. Well, we have a question from Joe. Actually, for me, I have a question for Jason. What have you learned or picked up from doing readings of other authors for your podcast? Wow, Joe, dude, that's a great frickin' question. You know, I was learning something just this morning when I did a show with a great author over another UK author, and reading her short story, I was really kind of creeped out and chilled by a particular scene. And so I went back and I kind of picked the scene apart as an editor, trying to figure out, you know, why was this so effective? And it was the way she used sight and sound and feel and taste. And she used them very, very well. She made sure she was using them in every single scene so that your whole body felt like it was really immersed in that. And these are all lessons that we're taught as authors or as writers of any kind, even from a young age. But it was a lesson for me in just how to use them effectively. And I've read so many authors' works now for the show, both long and short. And I really like how people craft their short stories, because it really is a difficult, it's a difficult length, the under 10,000 words length, to make a story work and to really get something across to your readers. And some of them are just kind of bone chilling, and other ones make you feel uplifted. But the whole time I'm reading them, I'm taking notes on how they structure their stories so that I can do a better job structuring mine. And then I will have to say that one of the last authors I read, his story made me sing during the narration. I was not a fan. If you are an author and you want to submit to the Raven, do not send me a story in which I have to sing. I will not be happy with you ever again.
I need but, to hear this. I really need to hear this.
Oh my gosh, it was horrible. The story was fantastic. It was so good. And then the stupid singing part. Oh my God, I was terrible. But Joe,
that episode is airing. I need to hear this.
it's already out there. It's the Christmas for Evangeline. I think the author was C. Courtney Joyner. But super cool story if you get past my singing.
I know. Yeah, what I'm doing after the show.
I don't want to set my ringtone to.
yes, and the Christmas song too. Wonderful. But so Joe, you know, I don't, if I had more time, I could probably give you a better answer to that. But mostly, what I'm doing is I'm watching how they craft their fiction and trying to soak that in and add it to my own toolkit so that I can use it, so that I can use them to make me better. Yeah. Okay.
That's one of the best ways to learn, though, is by example, you know, seeing others' successes and sometimes their failures and learning what not to do or learning the best practices.
I'm assuming that this is Rebecca's recipe for writing.
Camel pods, cookies, and whiskey.
All right. 2 out of 3 of those.
There's the secrets to success, everybody. Write them down.
You're going to have to unclick that because the cat is laying on the click button.
I think we just need to let the cat run the board from now on. This is great.
She's laying on the keyboard and my hand, so I'm stuck here. Oh,
I hope that's the one that YouTube chooses to use as our photo. Yes. It randomly picks the thumbnail, and sometimes you get the best facial expressions, or you know, just catch somebody in the middle of doing something really stupid. I hope that's the one it picks this time.
So, Thomas, before the show, you were graciously teaching us a little bit of Cockney rhyming slang.
Yes.
Yeah. So that's fantastic.
Wow. I just feel so like this is what it's like to be famous.
So Thomas, teach us again a little bit about this Cockney rhyming slang.
Okay, so I'm definitely getting attacked by every Cockney who watches this, but because I'm not. So Cockneys are from people in and around certain areas of London, and they have their own language, and it's called Cockney rhyming slang. And for example, stairs is apples and pears, because pears rhymes with stairs, but quite often you don't say the second word in the rhyming pair, so you'll say apples. So if you need to say I'm going upstairs, you'll say I'm going up the apples. And it's your job in Cockney rhyme, it's a very intelligent means of communication when they're trying to like hide things from prying ears, and I'm sure that's why it was originally invented. So it's down to the other person to figure out the second word and then what rhymes with the second word to get what they're talking about. So some more examples is, so an example sentence is, and if you can figure this out, bonus points, we're going down the rub for a ruby. Sorry, let me say that in Cockney. We're going down the rub for a ruby.
You're going down the pub for a boob.
Ooh, pub, you got pub.
Okay, we're going down to the pub for a ruby. You said ruby?
Yeah.
Beer. What rhyme? What would you do at a pub?
It'd be the second word. So the pub bit was rub because it's rubber dub dub.
Okay, all right.
So pub is the rubber dub dub.
Ruby. I don't know. I'm lost. Tell us. So
it's Ruby Murray.
What's Ruby Murray mean?
A curry.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I would never catch on.
So if you were a police officer listening in to a Cockney conversation, you'd be like, I don't know what about, I think they're drunk. There's that scene. Have you seen Austin Powers Goldmember?
Yeah. Yeah.
So it's the scene where him and his father meet. And, you know, he's like, if you're going to talk dirty in front of these American girls, at least talk English. And they go, all right, my son. And that whole scene is a Cockney rhyming slang scene. So if you want, and then that's where even the subtitles get confused, and the subtitles are like, question mark. So, yeah, if you want a good example of Cockney sentences, that's the perfect scene to watch.
Okay.
Heading to YouTube right after this to go look at that scene.
What about movies like Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels, or Layer Cake, or Snatch? Those kind of movies. That's what we think of as, you know, kind of
over there. Gang warfare, London.
Is that realistic, or is that just all bullshit?
I mean, it's very dramatized. There's not gun crime isn't really prevalent or a thing at all over here.
It is here.
Yeah, because we're the weirdos.
We've got
the whole of the rest of the world looks at us like we're weirdos for that.
Yeah, the whole of the UK is very opinionated on every time there's something in the States, everyone in the UK is like, why haven't they banned guns yet? And it's like, we just don't get it.
As a representation of America, we're saying the same damn thing over here too.
We're sorry. We aren't doing it. We're sorry. We're trying.
To be honest, too, because right at the end of the school year for my oldest, she's in high school, the very last day of the week before the end of school, they had a gun threat at her school. And we heard about it through the grapevine. We didn't hear about it through the, you know, CCSD actually sending parent emails. So I heard it from my daughter, her friends. I heard it through Twitter. I heard it through Facebook. And finally, I said, you know what, I'm not going to send her to school that day just because I'm not going to take the chance. And then that night, right before I was going to send her to school, we get the official message from CCSD telling us that there's no problem, but there'll be extra police there.
Well, I got to tell you,
we are
not going to get into this conversation because we do not do this on Spilling Ink, and because Jason over here will just go batshit. So what makes your dark fantasy dark? What's dark about it?
It's very unexpected. And so obviously when I'm writing, I know what's going to happen. I know the plot. So to me, the twists aren't twists because I'm like, oh, I can see that coming because I'm the one that builds up to it. I just read Joe's thing. The word pikey is highly offensive to the people it pertains to. And I've known people to be horrifically beaten up for referring to someone as that.
So don't say pikey if you go to the UK.
Yeah, don't. Cockney's fine. They're Cockneys. They know they're Cockneys. Oh, I'm a Cockney. Like, it's just sort of there. But pikeys, that's
I think we need a lesson now on British words that we are allowed to say.
Right. Because I was just telling Mike and Pippa, I was like, yeah, man, we got to come to Scotland and visit. I'll go to Scotland and get my ass kicked now with some of this stuff. I'm trying to rhyme words like sheep and goat or I don't know. I'll figure it out.
Have you ever seen that they do this every time a big movie comes out where they have the actors do a teach you a lesson on how to speak where they're from, and they hold up cards, and there's some that are, I think it's from Wales. The one guy, Michael Sheen, he was trying to give you slang from Wales. And one of the words is the longest word in human history I've ever seen.
So Welsh town.
How do you even come up with words like that? That's just a bunch of letters.
Yeah, there's a comedian that said the Welsh language was just a dad losing at Scrabble. Oh, if you want a really funny clip on that. Go to YouTube. There's a comedian over here called Greg Davis, and he is so funny. He's one of the funniest men I know because he's the comedian that seems like he is just a funny man. Like he's not writing jokes and telling jokes. He's just being himself and he's hilarious. But he's with Taylor Lautner, and they're really good friends because they did a TV show together Taylor came over here and did I worked on a show called Cuckoo with him, which was really funny. And he's giving Taylor loads of place names to say, and Taylor Lautner's trying his best to read British place names, and Greg's like judging him on it, and it's the funniest video. If you just go into YouTube and type in Greg Davis and Taylor Lautner, you'll see it, and it's so good. Yeah. It's just reminding me of that, and it just cracks me up every time.
There's just no understanding of some of these letter combinations.
No, definitely not. They're just like, English is such a unique language, and I think we've probably got more influences in our language than most other like languages, and I think British English really preserves it as well, because we're obviously mostly Latin, but then we've got heavy Greek, French, Germanic influences. Just like now, everywhere.
Do you do that in your writing, where you pepper in like Easter eggs of, you know, pop culture slang or something from where you're from?
Yeah, I definitely do. And I've got a made up language in my book as well, which I've tried not to develop too much, because I'm terrible at languages. I've tried to learn about 6 different languages in my life, and I can't speak any of them. But I've been trying to learn Norwegian most prevalently for about 4 or 5 years now, and I'm barely even conversational still. But my made up language is a mixture of Norwegian, English, and Polish. And that's because they're the 3 languages that I can check most easily, because my other half's Polish, so I can check the Polish with her. Some of my best friends are Norwegian, so I can check with them, and the Norwegian that I've learned for myself, and obviously English, because I can just about speak English. So, but there, yeah, that's why I chose that. So it's like an amalgamation of those 3 languages that make up, which is, it's called Maorish in mine. But there's Maorish and there's ancient Maorish, and yeah.
See, now I think that's cool. Like when authors come up with their own languages, and then if the book, you know, gets famous enough, and you have fangirls or fanboys running around trying to speak the language, it's yes, really cool.
I'm hoping they'll invent the rest of it for me.
What's that?
I'm hoping they'll just invent the rest of it for me.
There you go. I did Comic-Con 2 weeks ago, and there was a Daenerys, like full battle dress Daenerys, walking around the convention speaking in High Valyrian.
Wow.
So I was like trying to call her over to get a picture, and she would reply back, and I'm like, I can't understand you, but I recognize some of those sounds. And then she would explain what she just said. And she was brilliant. Absolutely brilliant.
Some people are so dedicated as well.
Well, just wait till people start tattooing your language on them, like little phrases. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Yeah.
It'll be Twitter, only in your
Maorish.
Now, how would you spell that?
Yeah. How would you say Twitter in your made up language?
I'll get back to you on that. Because it's a brand name. Twitter in Norwegian is Twitter, and in Polish it's Twitter. So it's,
oh, that's no fun. Come on.
I'd have to incorporate like tweet, as in like the sound that a bird makes, in both languages, and figure out. Like, or Twitter is a word as well. It's not just a brand. So it's like, here's a sound a bird can make, a Twitter. So
birds are twittering.
Twitter. Birds are, yeah. So I'd have to figure out those. I'd have to ask some people and then get back to you on what Twitter would be in Maorish.
I think that we've made Thomas say Twitter about 60 times in this interview. So I feel like we've really accomplished our goal, Katie.
If you're...
We had so many requests in the comments, so we just had to make sure that it kept going. Is everybody in the audience happy?
I was going to say, if you're not satisfied by now, then there's something wrong.
look for Thomas's new book out later, audio version. Everything Twitter.
Well, the audio version is going to be chapter 1. Twitter, Twitter, Twitter.
Well, I do have a request for you, though. I want you to say, trust me, I'm the doctor.
How shall I say it?
As you.
Just as me. Trust me, I'm the doctor.
So good. So good.
Do you think I could be the next doctor?
I think you could. You'd be like the... You'd be like the rough and tumble version. You'd be like the bearded one. Yes. Or like that Eggsy. Who was Eggsy? The hell was
Eggsy? Yeah, in Kingsman.
Tarrington. What's his name?
The actor name.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Taron Egerton. I think that's his name. I don't know. I don't know, but yeah, you're like the rough and tumble guy that came from the streets, and now you're like doctoring stuff and magicaling stuff.
See, I got really excited once because when David Tennant turned into Matt Smith, he grabbed hold of his hair, didn't he? And he was like, "Oh, I'm still not ginger." I was like, "Oh, I am. Yes. I could be the doctor."
Yes.
That's what I was doing at the convention because I couldn't get my hair blonde enough to do Jodie's doctor. And so I just ran around. I was like, look, finally a ginger.
Exactly. They need one. They need one.
So, okay. Favorite doctor?
Matt Smith.
Matt Smith.
Okay.
Just no hesitation. Just he.
I'm Camp Ten. I just absolutely loved him. And I loved Eccleston before him. I wish he'd had a chance to have another season. He was a really cool, gritty, but very heartfelt doctor.
Yeah, he was like the biker. He had his leather jacket and everything.
Yeah, but he had like those really poignant scenes where you could see he really wanted people to live and he didn't want to see anything destroyed, even though he looks like this big, burly, bad guy. I love that.
He's a great actor.
Yeah, he's good. And he plays a really good bad guy in a couple movies. He's got that look about him. He's got that really severe face, you know, but he's good. I like him a lot. But, you know, David Tennant was freaking brilliant in Good Omens. Holy shit.
Physical comedy. I love the way he moves. Yeah. Oh, and put him and Michael Sheen together. Oh my God.
That was amazing.
Absolutely wonderful.
For the last two Doctors, I've been gunning for Idris Elba to play.
He'd be awesome too. Oh, he's so good. Yeah. So good.
Really good.
He's amazing. I don't know if he's like too famous for that now though. I don't know. He would be amazing.
The Doctor's kind of such a prestigious role now that it might, you know, bring at least for a season or so, bring in, you know, that major talent because you want to be that iconic character.
Yeah. He could cameo as a future Doctor because obviously like John Hurt cameoed in one episode as a version of the Doctor, didn't he? So
I still need to see John Barrowman come back, especially now that we've got Jodie Whittaker, and have him just flirt with her for a minute and have her shut him down. I need to see that. Because I love John Barrowman. I loved Captain Jack. And this would be the perfect opportunity for him to, you know, immediately throw back into the flirt role.
Well, he would have to come in his Captina Americana outfit, though.
He probably would.
To do. Oh, Cat's got my headphones. Oh, my God.
I can't hear Captain Jack without thinking of Sparrow.
And that's how you know what kind of a nerd someone is, too. If you say Captain Jack and they know... Which one you're talking about.
Yeah, but there it is. Yes. Well done, Kat. Well done.
And I have to say, Jason, I chickened out yet again.
He was
at Phoenix Comic Con, and I could not drum up the courage to try and present my card and say, I'd love to get you on Spilling Ink.
No, you know what? All you need to do, just throw yourself at him. Throw yourself at his feet.
I am such a coward. I'm a freaking coward in person. If I don't have my wingman there to help me, I can't do it.
Oh, I understand. I have to have my wife with me to do pretty much anything. Like I can be brave as long as I've got my wingman. I hear you completely. I do. Yeah. You know. Well, all right, guys, we're at the end of our time now. We're a little bit over time, actually. I think this was a good chat. We talk about a lot of serious issues and got a lot of stuff out in the open there for everyone. And that was good. It was good stuff.
And the line for this one will be Twitter, Twitter, Twitter.
Quick, someone type it and hopefully YouTube will select it.
Don't say pikey. That's what I've learned.
When you're in England.
We need to have you back. And seriously, give us a list of words so we know what we're allowed to say and what we're not allowed to say.
But that means I'll have to say them all on air, so then I'll just have pitchforks outside.
It's true.
You said all of these things. But because we're British, they'd form an orderly queue, and then I would just have to...
They won't complain. They'll give you the stern look.
Yeah. I'll have a queue of people just like outside my house.
I can't believe you called that guy from the bar a pikey bastard. That wasn't very polite of you. All right, guys. It is time for this show to end. It has been a really great time. And thank you, Leah, for clicking on another comment there. So it's been great, guys. We're so glad that you joined us. Thank you so much for all the comments. We love them and the questions. Make sure that if you see this video on YouTube, you click like or subscribe. If you see it on podcast form, you click like and subscribe. And on Facebook, share it. Just share it to everybody.
That's
even
right.
If they don't want it, send it to them. All right. Good night, everybody. We'll see you next week.
All right. Bye, guys. Good.